Welcome to From Ink to Image Beyond the Headlines. There are so many times when the story in the Countywide and Sun has so much more to be shared with the audience. We're excited to bring you our new video and podcast series, From Ink to Image Beyond the Headlines. The Coordinated Community Response Team recently recognized four people who are on the front lines when it comes to dealing with domestic violence for going above and beyond to help the victims.
But you all, welcome today to this special occasion. I've been asked to be here today, and I am super honored to be here. My name is Jamel Payne with Citizen Potawatomi Nation, Workforce Social Services, and Community Advocate, United Way Board Member, and just a friend of Shawnee and family member to a lot of people around here. First, before I begin, I want to give out a shout out to all the influential people that has helped make an impact on domestic violence. I'm going to start with Project SAFE. We also have the absentee group here. We have the district attorney and all court offices. We have Tecumseh Police Department, Mr. J.R. Kitney and his work family. Please. And then we have the sheriff's office that's in the building. I thank you all one more time. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Mary Walters from Oklahoma City U.S. District Attorney's Office.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jamel, for that introduction, and thank you for having me. When I was asked to speak to you today, I said giving an attorney a captive audience and a microphone is always a really risky thing to do. As you know, one of the biggest fables any attorney has ever said is, I'll be brief, Your Honor. But I'm so grateful. I've been a domestic violence prosecutor for 14 years. I started out in the Tulsa County DA's office. I was there for 4 years. I then moved to a more rural district in northeastern Oklahoma for another 4 years. And 6 years ago, I was offered a job at the United States Attorney's Office in Oklahoma City. During my time as a state prosecutor, I became the lead domestic violence prosecutor for my district, and at the U.S. Attorney's Office, I primarily prosecute crimes in the violent crime section involving domestic abusers who are in illegal possession of firearms. And as you might be able to tell, I love talking about domestic violence. I have been in love with prosecuting these cases for over a decade, but I will tell you, this was not love at first sight. When you are a new prosecutor and you're starting out in your career, you think, what am I going to specialize in? Am I going to be a gang prosecutor? Am I going to do big drug prosecutions? And those are all important crimes to prosecute as well. But I never thought I should be a domestic violence prosecutor. I didn't really know what that was. I didn't know what it entailed. And quite frankly, it didn't sound as exciting as gangs and all of the other big name crimes that you hear about. And then I was given an opportunity that changed my life and my career path forever. When I was a young prosecutor, I had been on a criminal docket for about 10 months, so very experienced, as you can imagine, and I had been an attorney for less than 2 years. I was given a general felony docket, and a general felony docket, for those of you who don't know, are all the crimes that the supervisors don't want to do. I'm kidding, but not really. They are the crimes that are still serious, burglaries, strangulations, home invasions, but they don't fall under the specialized dockets of maybe the child sex abuse or the murders. And I had a strangulation case, and the survivor came to court and actually testified at the preliminary hearing, which is very exciting, right? Step one, we don't always get that. She came in to testify, and I had known from my vast experience of 10 months on a felony docket that may be the last time I ever saw her. And in fact, it was. I took her contact information. She came with a friend. I learned at that point, get contact information from everyone involved because you never know who you might be able to reach out to get somebody their information. In this case, I had a preliminary hearing. The survivor testified, and several months later, it was set for trial. Again, I was new, and I was told, we're busy. We don't have enough people to sit with you. It's okay. You're probably going to lose anyway, and that's all right. You can try this by yourself. So I did. I tried a domestic violence strangulation case without a cooperative survivor to come testify at trial to a jury in Tulsa County. I had offered this offender 3 years. He was facing 3 years to life. He said no. I said, but you can run it concurrent with your child abuse revocation, because he had a prior child abuse probation that he was serving. And he said no, because he knew that the survivor was not going to participate. I said, fine. So we did it. We went all out. We had an evidence-based trial. We brought a domestic violence expert to testify. The transcript of the survivor's previous testimony was read at trial. Her father testified. We had jail calls from the abuser to the survivor, and we just laid it all out there. And he was convicted. We had a second stage where all of his criminal history was admitted, and the jury recommended 20 years in prison. And I have to tell you, I was hooked. I said to myself, does everyone know you can do this? Does anyone else know about evidence-based domestic violence prosecution? I felt so empowered. I became a domestic violence warrior, and as my husband will tell you, I talked about domestic violence all the time. I talked about it with friends, I talked about it with family. I just wanted everyone to know this information and to be as empowered as I felt in that moment. And what I noticed was that when I would talk about this really empowering topic, people seemed to shy away. Voices lowered, eyes shifted away. And I thought, why? Domestic violence is everywhere. It touches all of our lives in some way, shape, or form. So why are people shying away? Why aren't we screaming this information from the mountaintops? And then you look at the statistics, which are staggering. And you don't have to look far. The Oklahoma Domestic Violence Fatality Review Board findings, the most recent from 2022, list the homicides that have happened in Oklahoma in that year. There were 105 domestic violence homicides in 2022 in Oklahoma. 92 cases, 26 of those were murder suicides. Intimate partner homicides were made up 43, and child victims, 17. 17 children died in 2022 because of domestic violence. It is staggering. We know that when firearms are introduced, the chance of homicide increases by 500%. And when a firearm is introduced, there is an 85% chance of domestic violence, or there cause 85% of domestic violence deaths. And as a federal prosecutor, that's why when I went to the U.S. Attorney's Office, I was actually really sad. I didn't know they prosecuted domestic violence cases, and I thought I was going to have to leave this really exciting prosecution behind me. But it is so prevalent that your U.S. Attorney's Office in the Western District of Oklahoma has filed more firearm cases than they have in any year prior, and we are consistently going after domestic violence offenders in our Operation 922. So why are we not more comfortable talking about this? Why does domestic violence live in the shadows? Because that's where domestic violence gets its strength, because it lives in the shadows, because it is not brought out to the light. So how can we combat an issue that is so prevalent but yet so rarely talked about? Over the last 14 years of my career, I learned to listen, not just hear, but really listen to where our survivors are and meet them where they are. Participating in high-risk team meetings, talking to officers about their work, and going out to the same houses every night, week after week, arresting the abuser, bonding the abuser bonds out, and then they have to do it all over again. And most importantly, I've spoken with hundreds of survivors. And let me tell you about the time I changed the way I approached interviews with survivors. After this amazing trial where I felt so empowered, I thought, man, after 2 years as an attorney, I am so talented. I have this. I know exactly what to do. Look at me. A survivor came in on a different case, and I launched in with all of my brilliant speaking. I said, this is what we're going to do. This is what your case looked like. This is the law. This is how I'm going to prosecute it. And I went on and on and on and on. And as soon as I stopped talking, she looked at me and said, how do I drop the charges? I wasn't listening. I heard her, but I was not listening. So what does accountability look like? Prosecution of offenders, absolutely, right? That's literally what I do for a living. But it can look different to where the survivors are at that moment. It could be a protective order. It could be safety planning, keeping someone safe while they are still in that situation, unable or unwilling at that time to leave. It could look like probation. It can look like a situation where someone has to attend batterers and intervention classes, and we keep our thumb, our judicial thumb on them, not necessarily in the prison system, but we have our eye out. And maybe you're thinking, but isn't your job to send people to prison? Sometimes. Absolutely. I've sent lots of people to prison. But that's just a part of the chain. And we really have to step back and look at domestic violence prosecution and domestic violence work in this arena as meeting people where they are. We should advocate for harsher penalties. Domestic violence is not an 85% crime. For those of you who don't know what that is, there are certain crimes in Oklahoma where an offender has to serve 85% of their time. Domestic violence is not one of those crimes. Violence is in the name, and domestic makes it even more serious. So let's advocate and work together. Let's use the laws to the fullest extent. Sometimes I charge domestic violence. Sometimes there was another law statute that didn't have the word domestic in it, but it fit the situation. And it's about that accountability and holding those offenders accountable. When we talk about domestic violence, we have to be mindful. We have to change the way we speak. And this is something anyone can do. Those of us who work in the arena, we also have lives, we have families, we have barbecues and kids baseball games and things that we attend that are not in this sphere. And we never know who is listening when we speak. Changing the narrative. I want to tell you about Jane. Jane was in a domestic violence situation. Nobody knew. She had a job. She had friends. She knew how to minimize and protect herself by not letting everybody know what she was going through at home. From all accounts, Jane's life looked picture perfect. Jane was at work one day, and she heard two coworkers talking. They were talking about someone else who had just recently left a domestic violence situation. And one of the coworkers used the rhetoric that we hear all the time. If it was so bad, why didn't she leave? If it was so bad, why are we just now hearing about this after a 20-year marriage? And I would never let someone treat me like that. And Jane's listening to this. She's hearing this, and it's reinforcing that staying in the shadows. It's reinforcing why she has never told anybody what's going on in her life. The other coworker, he shut that down. He said, you know, it's not as easy as you think. We don't know what was going on in that home. I'm just glad that this person is now safe. This person had no idea that Jane was listening, and definitely no idea what she was going through at home. And for the first time, she felt heard, she felt seen, and she felt safe. Now, Jane didn't disclose that day. She didn't talk about what she was going through. She wasn't ready. But that is a step forward, changing the narrative, changing the way we speak, and stepping forward and bringing that accountability and domestic violence into the light. We all have the power to advocate for change, to support survivors, to be mindful of how we speak in all of our interactions, and make a difference in combating domestic violence, because you never know who is listening, and you never know what your words will have as an impact, positive or negative, in another person's life. So let's make them positive. Thank you so much for allowing me to address you today. To those of you working in the domestic violence arena, thank you for your commitment to fighting this ever-present danger and evil in our communities. And to the survivors, thank you for your strength and for trusting us to walk with you on this journey. Together we can make a difference to bring domestic violence out of the shadows and hold offenders accountable. Thank you so much.
All righty. My friends, this most important part of the presentation is going to be the awards, okay?
Lieutenant Dakota Black nominated Pottawatomie County Assistant District Attorney Lori McConnell for one of the four Domestic Violence Awareness Awards. Lieutenant Black had the following to say about Assistant District Attorney McConnell.
Okay. So since Lori joined our team, she has transformed the landscape of domestic violence prosecution in our community, becoming a symbol of hope and strength for those who have suffered at the hands of abusers. Lori fights for victims in every case that she handles. She approaches each situation with a thoroughness that ensures no detail is overlooked and that no victim is left unheard. She is also very meticulous in her preparation for her trials and hearings. I think every law enforcement officer can attest to that, because she will make sure it's all there, which shows how determined she is in holding perpetrators accountable. Her impactful prosecutions send a strong message that violence will not be tolerated in our community. There was a time when law enforcement officers in our county felt disheartened, believing that their work went unrecognized and that their efforts were in vain. Lori has changed that narrative by encouraging open communication and collaboration between all involved in the case. She enhances the effectiveness of their work, leading to stronger cases and better outcomes for victims, and she has reinvigorated the morale for all working alongside her. Lori is not just a prosecutor, she is a champion for change. Her passion for her work is obvious in the relationships that she builds with her victims, law enforcement, and her colleagues. She listens with compassion, advocates with eagerness, and acts with integrity. Under her guidance, victims find a voice, and their stories are told with the respect and seriousness that they deserve. In my opinion, Lori's hard work has created a lasting impact on Pottawatomie County. Lori has changed the perception of domestic violence prosecution, reminding everyone involved that their efforts on the matter and that justice is achievable. Lori is more deserving of this recognition, and I look forward to working with her in the coming years and fighting side by side with her against domestic violence.
Next, Lieutenant Richard Finch shares his nomination submission for Deputy Matt Griffith for a Domestic Violence Awareness Award.
But I believe that Deputy Matt Griffith is deserving of a Domestic Violence Awareness Award due to his actions on July 24, 2024. Deputy Matt Griffith was dispatched to a physical domestic violence incident. Upon arrival, he was informed that the victim was deaf, presenting an immediate challenge in communication. Domestic violence calls are inherently difficult, but this situation required extraordinary patience and ingenuity due to the victim's inability to communicate verbally. Demonstrating exceptional problem-solving skills, Deputy Griffith found a way to communicate with the victim despite the language barrier. He also took the time to engage with the victim's son, who was fluent in sign language, and working together to bridge the communication gap. Through his collaboration, Deputy Griffith was able to gather crucial information about the suspect. Thanks to his persistence, adaptability, and effective use of resources, Deputy Griffith, along with the assistance of other agencies, successfully apprehended the suspect that night. His dedication to ensuring the victim's safety and his ability to communicate under challenging circumstances reflect his commitment to serving the community with compassion and professionalism. For his actions in this incident, I nominated Deputy Matt Griffith for this award in recognition of his exemplary service.
Morgan Stewart nominated Caitlin Patterson for the Domestic Violence Awareness Awards. Morgan and Patterson are part of the Absentee Shawnee Tribes Rising Warrior Program.
Okay. Ms. Patterson has been an advocate with the Absentee Shawnee Tribe Rising Warrior Department for just over 1.5 years. While working here, Caitlin has shown exceptional skills in helping those who come through our door. Caitlin has an understanding with those in the community that elevates her connection and trustworthiness with our clients. Caitlin will drop everything to help a client no matter where they are and then assure that they are okay. Most days, Caitlin is out of the office because she is either helping a client seek justice as a court advocate or in the community assisting clients. Aside from her work as an advocate, Caitlin is a great office teammate and friend. If someone has a family emergency, Caitlin is coordinating people to help make meals for the coworkers, and even outside of work, Caitlin's kindness shines through. She will drop anything to assist a client or a friend in need. I believe that Caitlin is a very valuable asset to the Absentee Shawnee Tribe Rising Warrior Program. From taking an abundance of clients and seeing them to their completion, or to working with the department to brainstorm ideas to make the program better. Caitlin is always coming up with ideas with our outreach coordinator to find fun ways to get our program info out to anyone. She has come up with ideas for parades, fairs, and community events. I know that our program is so lucky to have an advocate such as Caitlin. She has brought so many new ways to reach people, and I know for a fact she has made an impact on those in our service area.
For the final award of the day, Detective Dustin Richardson nominated victim advocate Nikki Partain for a Domestic Violence Awareness Award.
Yeah, nominated Nikki Wright. It's actually Nikki Partain for the 2024 Domestic Violence Award. Nikki's loyalty supporting victims of domestic violence is unique. She is a vital member of the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office. Nikki's vibrant personality brings a unique energy to her work. She is bubbly, loud, and full of life traits that often provide a much needed boost in positivity for victims during their darkest moments. Her infectious enthusiasm helps victims feel seen and supported, reminding them that they are not alone in their journey. Nikki's warmth and positivity are sometimes exactly light with others. She stands side by side with victims as they face their perpetrators and others, and offers a sign of protection. Nikki also plays a critical role in supporting the Criminal Investigation Division. Her help making calls to victims and witnesses, arranging interviews, and gathering vital information has proven to be indispensable. Her exceptional note-taking allows investigators to focus on the complexities of their cases, knowing that no detail will be overlooked. Whether it's day or night, Nikki is always available to assist when a victim is in need, displaying her dedication to both her team and the people she serves. We're incredibly fortunate to have Nikki Partain as part of our team. Her passion for helping others and her heartfelt care have positively impacted countless lives. I believe that Nikki symbolizes the true spirit of this award, and that her work is a testament to the difference one person can make in many lives.
Before closing the event, Lieutenant Dakota Black shared a few quotes from victims that were received at a recent training event.
So, our office attended an event this month that was a domestic violence resource fair that Sac & Fox put on in Stroud, Oklahoma. When we were there, we took these flyers that we made. It's called #ThisIsDV. We asked them to put anything that they'd like on there. We gave them some ideas of maybe an incident that's occurred with them involving domestic violence, something that's happened to them, something said, how it impacted them, because we wanted to show our deputies, because they're hung on our doors at the office. So we wanted to have our deputies read those when they walked by to know these are people in our community. This is why they're not leaving. This is what they're facing. This is what they've gone through. So it was very impactful for our deputies to be able to read that. So I'm not going to read all of them because there is quite a bit, but I did pick out a couple that I think were really, really good and really well written. So the first one, it's got a lot of writing on it. She put, "I still keep a go bag in my car just in case I have to run." She's been out of a domestic violence relationship for who knows how long, you know, and that's something that she's had to live with, and that's something she still fears. So, "You're the dumbest person I've ever met. I can't even beat the sense into you." These are things she's told. "If I can't have you, no one can." "A handgun was shot off next to my head after my abuser threatened suicide." "I would get locked in the closet for hours." "You can go to the cops, but I'll bury you and your future kids in court costs. Go ahead." "My home is a prison." "My perpetrator choked me out and threw me on the bed and beat me. He also hit me so hard he cracked my zygomatic process, trying to make my eyeball fall out of its socket. He also raped me when I was asleep with a gun to my head." "My ex chased me with an axe." "You know what makes me angry and you still choose to do it. Why do you love making me this angry?" He then slammed my finger in the door and broke it. "He raped me after I said no, then told me never say no to him ever again." "He pulled a gun on me in the driveway." This was something she used to tell herself, and she wrote, it's very short, it just says, "Dear voice, remember you have one." She said that helped her. I don't know where she got the quote, if she saw it somewhere and it stuck with her, but she said that helped her get through her situation. So the last two that I was going to read, I talked to Scott about them when we came back, and I read them multiple times, and I wanted the deputies to read these specific ones because these are actually directed towards law enforcement. These people are very pro law enforcement, but this was to show deputies how they feel when we're out and when we're dealing with them. So when I was 16, I started a relationship with a man who was 5 years older than me. When I was 18 and pregnant, I was beaten by him on a regular basis. I was strangled several times and punched so hard I thought I could feel my bones break. I called the police several times. No neighbors called the police several times. Police never gave me resources, told me about protective orders, or even tried to help me. They would tell me one of us needed to leave, but I had nowhere to go, and I didn't even know about women's shelters. I was told if we come back out here tonight, you're both going to go to jail, so I stopped calling the police. She threatens to call 911 if I tell her no. You laughed in my face when I said that he was abusing me. I almost died waiting for you to respond. I told you I was scared and worried and that he would attack me again and you dismiss me. I told you he had guns and you didn't believe me because he was well liked. I had just been choked out and it was the eighth time you came to our house and you did not even ask me if I needed help. My event was brushed off because he was high up in the community. The last statement that's on the paper was, I feel like, the most impactful thing that we probably received that day. And I think everybody's probably read this one on this paper. It says, I can see it in your face that you are annoyed with my situation. I heard you say she won't leave. It's comments like that that keep me stuck. So as she was talking earlier about victims hearing when we're talking and maybe we're not paying attention, we're talking too loudly, they're listening. Because they're there and they're eager for you to help them and they're looking for that help. And they may not leave, but they may leave the next time. Or they may leave the 13th time you're there. But they're not staying because they want to be there. They're staying, there's a reason. And those are a lot of the reasons, you know, having guns put to their head, being raped, being beaten, children being threatened. They're not staying because they want to. So law enforcement in the room really needs to remember, because this individual lives in our county that wrote this paper. So I thought these were really impactful, and we're actually going to start doing these every year because I thought they were really good. We just got to remember who we're fighting for, what we're fighting for.
That was powerful. And you know, we hear about that very seldom. You may see a little hints of it. You may see it more on TV, but it's happening in our own neighborhoods. Yeah. It's happening to our neighbors. Church members, school members, we have to be there for one another. We have to be that listening ear. All right, so what we have next on the agenda, we're going to give a moment of silence for each one of those individuals. And if you just bow your head in prayer, lift one up for the Lord and all the angels above that's fighting before them. And together we say amen.
Amen.
Amen.